What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. Today, I have a topic that kind of gets me ranting a little bit because I'm just incensed by the lack of, you know, just research and knowledge when people are making decisions about this. So what I'm talking about is companies, CEOs saying to me, we need to stand up an SDR team. And I'm like, oh my gosh, in this day and age, what does that even mean anymore, right? And it's very costly. You got to have an SDR leader. There are so many pieces and parts to it. But what they're really saying to me when they say that is, I need my salespeople, my AEs, my account executives on the phone with people who can buy from them. And I don't know how to make that happen. And the others around me seem to be doing it with SDRs. Well, the truth is, no, they're not. That SDR playbook that Aaron Ross built for Salesforce, I don't know, long time ago now, right? It just doesn't work anymore. Now, that's not to say that you can't have people doing research, making phone calls, and getting appointments. You can, but not the way we've done it in the past. And this is why I am so excited to have Ryan on the show today, because he's been doing this his whole career and he's got it figured out. But here's the thing. It's changed over time. And so we're going to take a journey with Ryan to see how and why he started his companies. He's started and sold several companies now, and how he's changed over time to get to where he is right now with the two new companies that he has. So welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited for the conversation.
Absolutely. We've got so much to talk about. And currently you're running two companies, Outbound Operations and Call Blitz. So let's just start with briefly telling everyone what those two companies do. And then we're going to go back in time and journey forward.
Sure. So Outbound Operators, we are helping organizations that are trying to solve the exact problem you talked about. Make outbound work, right? So when you think about the playbook that everyone is running today, they think they need to buy all this tech stack. They think they need to get maybe even some automations with dialing and all these other things, and then hire a bunch of people to get to market. And we have a different thesis. We come in and we set up a lightweight tech stack that's actually enabled from my process that I've been using for the last 18 years. We then help find the right people, train them and onboard them, and then teach the company how to operate this system and pass it off, right? So we are trying to, if you think about outsource sales development, which a lot of people will turn to try to speed up the market, we're trying to insource the outbound function so they can actually do it right. So that's the Outbound Operators. Call Blitz is a virtual sales floor. So this is a simple software that helps make sure that sales reps are learning from each other, onboarding, and getting better on the phone every single day.
Yeah, I love this so much, Ryan, because you and I were talking about this before we started recording. Back in the day, right, and I used to work years ago now, this is in the 90s, with a lot of big centers, call centers, right? And we would do call blitzes where we would, okay, today everybody's going to, you know, you've got your list of 50 or whatever, you're going to call them. We're going to be listening in. We're going to help you. We're going to coach you, right? And we would just get everybody on the floor, but they were together in the same room. And then I would listen in, the managers would listen in. We'd kind of give on the fly coaching. We'd pause everybody for a minute. Okay, when you get off your next call, stop. Let's all talk about what we've been finding. It was so much fun. And we advanced our team so quickly doing this. So I love that you've figured out how to do it virtually because so many teams are remote now.
That's right. Yeah. It's that old school sales pit is gone. So trying to reinvigorate that culture, that motivation that you get from everyone calling together, right? Solving the We need our reps to be making more calls. Yes. And then we also want to make them better at the calls that they're having. So those are the two problems we're solving with Call Blitz. And it's a fun little project that we have going.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know I mentioned this to you before, but I have all of the CEOs that I work with asking me, oh, you know, should we hire SDRs? How many do we need? How do we do that? Right. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. Right. To really make use of SDRs, you have to have a process, a system, and a way for them to be successful. And what I'm seeing, Ryan, is people will hire one or maybe two SDRs, and they don't have an SDR leader, somebody who's actually done the job and knows how to do it. And then they just give them lists to call, not even like you're talking about tech stack, a dialer and some other cool stuff, none of that. And barely any messaging, and they're wondering why these people cannot book calls.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're actually ahead of the curve if they're providing the list. What I see is they don't even provide the list, which is baffling, right? The list is the strategy. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're trying to solve for target message channel timing. Right? That's the old school sales and marketing equation. You got the right people with the right messages in the right channel at the right time. Boom, magic's happened. But most people struggle with that first thing, like huge, right? So the first thing, and we talked about this a little bit, is the targets. Before you even go hire people, you need to know how big your addressable market is, right? How many actual accounts do you want to be trying to engage with that you think is a good fit for what you do? And that exercise for folks is painstaking. They don't want to do the work. They think it should be on someone else's plate, but like that is the most important piece of the equation, right? You're going to go hire all these people to go have conversations. You get them to a meeting, like, why are we talking to these people? Like, that's a very expensive endeavor. If you just took the time up front to select the right accounts, actually select the right people within those accounts that you want to be speaking with, and then you develop a message that resonates with them, then you could put the reps on it. And more often than not, what we find is that, number one, there is a TAM problem, right? There's just not enough people to be going after.
Oh, 100%. Especially like you think you have thousands and thousands, but then, you know, if you really hone in on out of those, because people, I think it's, I don't know if this started with the venture capital craze or whatever, but total addressable market. Yeah, but your total addressable market isn't your ICP, your ideal customer profile, right? Yes, correct. This is big. It's huge. It looks like, oh my gosh, we can make so much money. But when you really target out of those, who is most likely to buy? And what does that even mean? Like, how do you figure that out, right? But you have to. And, you know, this is where marketing should really come in with marketing research. But like you said, it's a number of things. It's not just, here's a list, right? We have to have the right people at the right time with the right message. And we have to do that really well over and over again to get the results that we're looking for. But most people they're calling people who are never going to buy from them. And it makes it so difficult.
Well, first they're calling people that'll never even answer the phone.
Yeah, that's true.
that's a big problem.
And let me just pause you right there for a second, because I just had this conversation with a whole bunch of tech CEOs up in Vancouver that belong to an organization called Ace Tech that I work with. And, you know, people in certain industries do not answer the phone at all, right? But in some industries they do, and you really have to know that.
That's right. Yeah. That's the actual first step of the process we deploy, which is, well, number one, we go through an exercise to always make sure that, does this investment even make sure? If you're going to build an outbound sales development motion, let's actually figure out your math of sales, right? Let's put a revenue target you want to get to associated with this investment. What's the average sales price? And then we can make some assumptions if you don't have it yet around what your win rate might be, what your accepted sales accepted rate would be if someone did show, what's your show rate on meetings? What's your schedule rate on meetings? And we can use benchmarks to get you pretty close and actually go all the way down based on that math. How big of a list that would you need to even keep one rep busy? Okay.
Yes.
So we can do that right away to figure out how many people you might need. The second thing is, okay, once we make that assumption, now let's take a look at that list size. And there's actually a fraction of them that you can actually engage in a channel, right? So when it comes to the phone, only about 20 to 40% of an audience is going to pick up if you call them enough times. So The problem is everyone treats a lead as if I'm going to call them and 100% are going to answer. That's just not true. Right. It's only going to be about 20 to 40. So you have to, you know, do the math on that to figure out how many total leads would then result in the number of people that you could actually reach. And now you're looking at an equation that says, this is what would be required to keep one rep productive. What's challenging for most of these people is they get the people hired, they give them that list. And if you actually look at whether they're using a sequencer approach or they're just saying, hey, we're just going to dial, they're wasting 80, 90, sometimes 95% of their activities in a channel that will never result in an outcome. And that right there is like the big idea that we, you know, kind of unlock for people with the outbound operators. And we show them very quickly how that works. But once you solve that equation and you figure out what's your total reachable market in that channel, then magic can be made, right? Because the fastest path to revenue is always what we started this whole conversation about, is how do we get our sales team into more conversations with the people that are ready to buy? And you take all of that, and then I think you and I geeked about it this years ago with Chet Holmes, right? We're both big fans of Chet Holmes. His old buyer's pyramid, that still rings true. In your market, there's only a certain amount of people that are going to be buying now. So many people that are open to it. So many people that aren't thinking about it. And then the rest don't think they're interested right now, right? So it's 3% buying now, about 7% that are open to it, 30% aren't thinking about it. And then you have 60% that are going to basically tell you to pound sound. Yeah. And so it's not about like a flash in the pan. It's about, you know, make the list, you call the list, and then you're doing the follow-up. And where the money's made is trying to activate that 30% that aren't thinking about it so that you can get in the buying window when the time's right. And that's when you're leading the charge on evaluations, RFPs, whatever it might be. And so when you're using the SDR today, everyone's so focused on how many appointments can we get? Meetings, meetings, meetings. But the reality is, like, how many conversations can we start in the market? How much information can we capture around where people are in this buying journey? Now, if you layer that on top of crossing the chasm, right? If you're thinking about the math of markets and then the adoption curve around innovators, early adopters, the chasm, the early majority, late majority, and you do all that math, you're just talking about a super finite bullseye that you're going after, which is really difficult to get to. You can do all the market intelligence all you want. You can build all the lists in the world, but now we have to think about reach and then where they're at in the journey. But still to this day, if you do it the right way, you can get to that chunk so much faster if you use the phone the right way.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. What you just said is exactly right. And yeah, so now I want to explain to everyone, how did you get here? How did you get to know this? How did you get this worked out so well and know that it works? So let's go back in time a little bit. And back to when you were working in sales, right? But kind of, we'll go quickly, but you know, what made you start thinking, you know, this isn't working. How can we make it work better? And then how did you start that very first business?
Yeah, well, so we can go all the way back in 1986. No, I'm just kidding. I started my sales career. Well, I was born in 86. So, 2008 is when I started my sales career. Graduated from school as a math major. Actually, I was going to go be a teacher, and I decided not to do that. Went to San Francisco, got my first sales job, which was a great time to sell, right? Back in 2008, right in the middle of the home crisis, and I was actually working for a company that sold to a consumer home finance product.
Oh, geez.
So you can imagine how well that went. So I worked at my first company selling to homeowners when it was the best time to sell to homeowners. And that's where I cut my teeth. From there, I moved into a pay-per-click advertising company. And that's where I spent the majority of my really learning years, right? So it was a French-based startup, not funded, and selling pay-per-click, which no one knew about back then.
Right.
Now,
so you're
now
calling it's... people who have no idea who your company is, nor do they know what pay-per-click is.
Correct. Yeah. And we didn't have access to all these amazing data tools that tells you, like, this is the search marketing manager, right? It was like you went to a website to see if they were doing paid ads already. And then you would click onto their website, find a phone number, call in and say, who's in charge of, right? So that's what started the whole process, was, It was 100% phone based. When no one knows you, you have to use the phone to get started always. And, you know, even back then when people were more likely to answer the phone, getting to the contact information was much more difficult. So it took a lot of work to get somebody on the phone. That's what started my process that I use these days, which is buckets, which is I make a list. These are people that I think are doing advertising or could be doing advertising. And then I have to, so those are the accounts. And then I have to find the people within the accounts. I didn't have it already, so I had to go find them, get the name, get the number. And I started to look at when I call a number, what's the fastest path to get to a conversation? Because that's what I'm after, right? I want to improve my dial to connect rate. If I make 100 dials, I want to talk to as many people as possible. So I started looking at, you know, when I call a number, little shortcuts, like, is there a dial tree? We'll document the dial tree. Is there a gatekeeper? Get the gatekeeper's name so I can, you know, be friendly and get a transfer. In their voicemail, do they record their name or not? These are like little signals that can help you realize, is this number worth calling or not? So I started doing that very early. Through that job, I went from lead gen to sales, eventually the sales leader. And we did pretty well considering back then a bunch of companies had a lot of funding and we went from basically zero revenue, about $15 million in the course of 3 years. And
here you are teaching everyone to do this method that you were doing and it was working for you.
Correct. That's what allowed me to, you know, work through the ranks.
Right. So now you had a lot of people doing this method and proving out it didn't just work for you. It worked for them too.
Everybody we hired was super successful on the phone. So that was my first job that was like I really had traction. From there, I actually started my first company, which was a sales tech recruiting company. So the sales leader at the first company I worked for in the financial industry, we were good friends and we played poker and all that stuff. And he saw what I was doing and he's like, hey, I got this idea. I work with this recruiter. He was a Salesforce admin, did Salesforce consulting. He's like, I work with this recruiter in my building and she just gets these checks all day long, but she has no process. She has no system. I think we could take your system, be really smart with it. I got all the operation stuff. You just go build the sales team. So money was coming back in. This is 2011-ish, back into Silicon Valley. A bunch of tech companies were getting funded. So I had my first stint in entrepreneurship then to be basically the VP of sales, with co-founder VP sales. So I built out the sales team there. And that's where I really started to network and get relationships with some of the fastest growing companies in the area. We did that for a while. I got recruited back to the pay-per-click company because I recruited my sales leader for a sales leader job. And then he recommended me to go take over. So that's when I went from being just a sales leader to a managing director. It's kind of like the country CEO. At like 25, I was running three offices and, you know, $20 million revenue P&L.
Wow.
So did that for about a year. And then I got recruited from my business partner to a funded SaaS company in the same space. It was performance marketing still. So pay-per-click was starting to really be the ipso facto, but there was other things happening. This big thing called Facebook started happening. So I got recruited to a Facebook marketing company, built the sales team there. They got acquired. Got recruited to a new thing was happening called retargeting. You know, everyone knows these things now, but
yeah,
it's all in the same
space.
You
all over the internet.
That's right. So this company did it, worked with really, really big retailers and brands. And they had this like internal marketing thing. You now see Amazon has their own marketing application. This is before retailers did that. We basically did those for Costco and Walmart and before they had their own engines. That's what we did there. Built that team out. We were Inc. 5000 2 years in a row. Got recruited from there to another one, which was, let's go back to Facebook again. Facebook's now doing advertising. It was a Facebook advertising company. That was an early stage startup. We ended up getting acquired by a massive player in the space called Sprinklr. And that was my stint as a sales leader. So just using my process at all these companies, the phone first, no one knows us. We've got to go to market as lean and mean as we possibly can. Stuck in my lane of performance marketing and using the phone to build sales teams.
During this period, so you kept building up sales teams. So it's like, okay, go hire these people, teach them the process, get them successful. And obviously it worked because every company that you worked with was highly successful, either got bought out or, you know, you got recruited out to go do it again. What was the learning for you from the first time you built, you know, you were doing it yourself and then, you know, you taught other people to do it and it was mm-hmm. still working for this, I don't know, it seems like 4 or 5 year period of time where you were building these. What was the learning for you about, okay, start from scratch, go hire these salespeople and teach them how to do this process?
So for me, as a sales rep early on, and then as I got into sales leadership roles, again, I have a math background. So I think from like first principles, it's like, it's all an equation to me. I just use math of sales, right? How many activities does it take to get a conversation? How many conversations does it take to get a meeting? How many meetings? That's always been my driving principle. And so I've always just hyper focused on the efficiency gains around, if I'm a rep or I'm a sales leader, it's pretty straightforward. The job to be done is be talking with your market, right? That's the job. And so if I'm not in a scheduled interaction with my next best customer, so we're sitting down in a Zoom or face-to-face, then I want a system and a process that within a couple clicks, I should be in my next best conversation. So that's always been my North Star, always. So as I went through the ranks, obviously more and more technology is popping up. Yes. You know, CRM's getting better. More data is making it easier to get access. I no longer have to use the system to call in and say who's in charge of. I can say, oh, this is the person, and I can, you know, get, it's a faster path
easier to get the data. So much faster.
It's faster. But what I was finding is that it was actually, there was creating more challenges, right? So with more data, people think that that's going to help them get to the result faster. But I call this the sales acceleration industrial complex. It's like these companies are funded and make their money by selling you more data, more credits, or more seats. And that's not really the way to do it, right? I want my system and the process to keep my organization in that North Star. If they're not in a meeting, they're in the next best conversation. And I need to know at all times, how big of a list do I need? And I want to feed them with the right next people to call. And so as CRM and dialers and data, I'm just constantly testing, right? Is it more activity? Is it the better data? But my process is, because of the path and all that stuff, has always been uniquely designed to determine who I can actually reach and who I can't. And once you unlock that code, you can actually set up a system where it's literally possible to use simple CRM, a dialer that actually delivers these days. And with this process in place, where if my reps aren't scheduled interaction with a customer, they click a couple of buttons and be the next best conversation. And by doing that for now 18 years, I've kind of cracked the code on the math behind any given list in any given market to accomplish that. So I've just always fascinated on those constraints, you know, theories of constraints, and like, what can I do as a sales leader to eliminate any of that wasted activity to keep my team as productive as possible?
Wow.
So it's kind of hard because there's so many little instances, yeah. But I've tried every tool on the market. You know, I've used all the sequencers, all the datas, all
but
that.
But I think I'm hearing from you is it's not static. I didn't develop this and then just keep doing the same thing over and over again. Yes, the process was the same, but each time you're like, how can we do this? Or now it's harder to do this. Oh, or the there's more data, but that made this problem. So you're constantly, you know, regrouping and saying, how do I use this new data, this new information to economize and make sure that everybody's on the phone, either
exactly
having
right.
a conversation or the next best.
That's exactly right. That's it. If you can solve for that, then you have
it's beautiful
kind of
thing.
Nirvana. Then it just comes down to, once you solve for conversations, it's about, is it the right person and are we saying the right things?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
List message.
Absolutely.
Which is-
and that's a big problem that we won't even go into right now, but get the right person and say the right thing. Like, oh my gosh, that is a huge problem for most companies as well. All right. So you're moving through this and you started a company, but then went back to working for someone else again. And over this period of time, technology's changing, things are changing, and you're adapting to those things. But I know what was going on in your mind. You're thinking, there's got to be an easier way to do this. There's got to be a tool that could do that. So that springboarded you to the next.
That's exactly right. And when I got to Bushaka was the company we got acquired by Sprinklr. Bushaka was actually a pretty well-funded early stage startup. So I had access to the best tools. Like, he's like, whatever you need, get it. And this is like when Outreach came to the market, Connect and Sell, was working on an integration with them. And it was like, holy cow, this is the holy grail. And when I was at Sprinklr, I realized that the problem was a little bit different, which is kind of what we talked about earlier, where they're kind of bloated, right? We have way too many reps for the amount of work to be done. So while at Bushaka, we were lean and mean and fast and I could get through stuff, when I got to Sprinklr, it was like, they're trying to hire, but we shouldn't really hire. And
let's maximize the reps we have before we hire more, which is something right. that people just seem to keep missing. Like, we're not hitting our number, We better hire more. No, let's go back and get the people we have at capacity and then decide to hire more.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I saw this report. This is 2015. LinkedIn put out there. It was like the fastest growing roles in the future are going to be engineers, data scientists, and sales development reps. And it kind of struck me like, that's interesting. There was still in San Francisco. So there was Dev Boot Camp, really popular place for people who didn't have coding backgrounds to learn how to code and get tech jobs. There was Galvanize, which is like a data scientist school. I didn't see anything for sales development reps. And yet everybody, including Sprinklr, wanted to hire a sales development with 1 or 2 years of experience. Well, how are you going to do that? You have to, I guess, manufacture it. So that's when I decided to say,
hey, school knowing how to be a sales development rep. So it's like, they've got the only way to learn, right, was on the job training.
Correct. Yeah. And so that's when I started my path towards, I'm only going to be an entrepreneur anymore moving forward. I'm going to get this done. And the first gig was the Inside Sales Bootcamp, which what we did was try to take my process and enable it inside the best tools possible so that we could help organizations get the production of like 5 average reps with 1. And that was the kind of thesis that I've been playing with since then. So about a decade now. It's like, how do we make sure that it's always process first before we put in the technology that will automate, and then put the best people in that seat to get the most production possible, using math, using the math of markets, using all the stuff we've talked about to ensure that we get the most efficient engine possible to ensure that the sales organization is getting to market. And the end game, of course, for every company is market dominance, right? I know we have our friend Chris Beal that talks about this often, right? We need to reach everybody in our market and talk to them at least once a quarter forever until they're our customer.
That's right. They will need to buy what we have.
That's exactly right.
We're calling the right people. So this is the big caveat. When you're calling people who are never going to buy from you, it doesn't matter how often you call them, they're never going to buy from you. When you target, and you know who's most likely to buy from you, if you just stay with them,
that's right,
they will eventually buy from you. And this is the thing that kills me, where they're, you know, having these lists and running through them and throwing them out and starting a new list. Like, that's just crazy. If you have the right list and you stay in touch, magic happens.
Yeah, that's right. The magic's in the follow-ups. The money's in the follow-ups, or one of my good buddies coined the fat stacks are in the circle backs. So that's the game. And that's what my process is always deployed, which is, again, efficient path to that first conversation, but also dispositioning those calls so we understand, are we targeting the right people? Are we saying the right things? You know, every conversation should result in a yes and no, and not me and not now, and a why. And if you actually capture that data the right way, you can actually orchestrate the follow-up list to be a very, very productive use of your time. But you also get that market intelligence to improve our targeting and our messaging along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I know you started a company that was actually training SDRs, and that worked out really well. And you sold that. And then what came after that one?
So when we were training the SDRs, getting them good on the process, good on the tools, putting them into the tech companies, there was a trend. Hire 10, keep 2, right? What's going on here? I actually ended up writing my book, Outbound Sales, No Fluff, around this time, which kind of outlined, it's a very simple guide. You read this thing in 45 minutes, but my process is outlined in there. It's called Buckets. And I got so many people coming to me like, how do we put this in our company? So it made me get the idea that I had the bootcamp for the talent. Why don't I have the bootcamp for the founders? So we started the sales developers with exactly that. We'd come in, we'd set up the tech stack the right way, we enabled the process, build the playbooks, run it for them so they can get a benchmark of what success looks like, and then enable their current staff if they had it, or in partnership with the talent, we can now bring in the right talent, and they didn't have this, you know, hire 10, keep two mindset.
Yes. You know. I love that you did that because that's my focus, of course, you know, is on the CEOs. And why? Because the CEOs become the sales prevention department because they're doing things the old way and it's not working. But then they just think, well, if they would just do more of it or if they would just do it better. But no, things change. And the way when you started the company and you were this only seller with founder-led sales, you did it a certain way and it worked. There's a lot of reasons why. One, you have the title founder, but we won't go there. But you never really got a process down anyway. And then you hired these people and everybody's sort of doing it their own way or whatever. And then you're thinking, well, if you would just do it my way, you would get more sales. But that's just not how it works. And so that makes them the sales prevention department. They're standing in the way of the growth of their own company. And by focusing on them, yes, got to train the SDRs, sure, of course. But helping them see, look, if you really want to do this well, as the CEO, here's what you need to know, right? We're going to set it up this way. We're going to run it this way. And then you're going to get the results that you need.
That's exactly right. Process first, right? And if you don't document a process, it doesn't matter what tools you have. You know, people aren't going to follow it. And it's going to become a lot in the ways really quickly, right? And if you really want to make it work, and we just talked about this earlier about targeting. Are we targeting the right people? Like, is it even worth the follow-up? What your process has to have a way to collect that information consistently. Everyone has to be on the same talk track. Mm-hmm. You know, the information that we're capturing, how we're actually getting that information back into our system has to be consistent. Otherwise it's just noise. That's a huge problem is, you know, especially if you bring in more experienced sellers, everyone has an ego and they have their way of doing things. And that's not for me. I don't do that. You know, I don't like to use scripts because I sound like a robot. It's like, well, in the very first conversation, it's not about how good you are. It's about actually collecting information. Right. And if you have the right framework, you can actually get to the information you need in a much more consistent way that gives you the signals needed to build that flywheel.
Yeah. And otherwise you're literally wasting that call.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, Jeb Blunt in Fanatical Prospecting laid this out really, really well. And I preach this all the time because, you know, the purpose of the call, he says there's four main outcomes. You know, you're building awareness, you're gathering information, you're setting an appointment, or you're moving a deal forward.
Yeah.
Most people just think about those last two, right? We got our sellers using the phone and those are kind of hard to find these days that will actually do the follow-up on the phone to move a deal forward, which is another problem we could go into length at. But the one that everyone talks about is appointments, but they forget about those other two very, very important outcomes, right? We actually have to build awareness and more importantly, gather information. Again, are we talking to the right people? Are we saying the right things? Because if we know for sure it's the right people, then we have a message issue. But a lot of times we don't know yet. And so we have to have messaging that allows us to get some information. And when you just call and the only intention is to get an appointment, you're never going to get that information.
Exactly.
Do you have a problem that you ever care about solving? Right.
And that's right.
It's crazy to me.
Well, in that building awareness part, Ryan, too, it's like you have to build awareness in such a way that these people will want to talk to you again. Because if you build awareness and they're like, oh yeah, well, we're not really doing that right now. It's not something it's interesting, but we're not, you know, in the market for it, but they've got, you know, yes, I am the right person and I am interested. It's just not now. Right.
Correct.
Then knowing that and getting them to want to take a call from us in the future becomes the point, not setting an appointment because there's no appointment to set. Right. And I think you're right. People are just missing this and they have their SDRs just pounding the phones to set appointments. And I'll never forget this. One of the clients that I worked with, it's been almost 10 years now, but they had the best appointment setter I have ever seen in my entire life. This kid, unbelievable, out of school, could talk to people on the phone and just get them to love him and say yes and book an appointment. And he was booking so many appointments for those AEs and not one single deal closed. And I was like, stop. Right? What are you guys doing? And so I started listening to him. Well, the message was great. He was talking to the wrong people. They had absolutely no ability to buy. Yeah, they were interested because it was something that would certainly make their job easier and cooler, but they didn't even know how to get the right person on the phone with them because they were way too low down. And you know, they were so interested, but I mean, literally zero deals closed in like 3 months. And I was like, stop, what is going on here? And we had to dig into it. I'm like, you got to talk to the right people, right? So it's just a testament to, hey, you know, sometimes you're doing something with the wrong purpose in mind. Set appointments was their purpose. It was the wrong purpose, right? Yeah. If he would have said, oh, you know, well, I'm so glad you're interested. Like, you know, how would this happen at your company? Who would help you buy this? And got more information, like you said, then we would have known what to do next.
Yeah. And even if they took the next step where he's great at getting that first call, let's have the professional seller determine that. At the end of the day, we're so broken in the appointment setting have to turn into revenue right away. And reps don't take that extra time to do that up front. Like the discovery kills momentum, and they spend all this time on deals that they could have got that information up front, built the right buying committee and went after the right people, getting the referrals, et cetera. But I say this all the time. Everybody comes to us. We want more appointments. It's like, you don't want more appointments. You don't want more meetings. You want revenue, right? We are after revenue. So we have to
talk to the right people about the right things. So you're not going to get to revenue without doing that.
Right. And you know, there's a time and a place for this, but I kind of coined this concept, and you hit on a few of these points already. The sales development reps shouldn't be appointment setters. They should be activating your market. Okay. So it's audience activation. And so what they really should be looking at is calling to activate a lead, right? And a meeting is an activation because it's high level of interest and they'll take the appointment, but you're looking for four eyes. Interest, which is, you know, I'll take a meeting, or to your point, this is kind of interesting. Let me do a little bit of due diligence. And depending on your brand, that may be a lot of people that most people give up on because it's like, oh, they asked for an email. It's a waste of time. No, they just don't know who you are. They want to do a little bit of research. I mean, if you've done any calling in 2025, people will literally say, that's interesting. What's the name of your company again?
Right.
And they're looking it up online. They're going to go try to, like, they're not going to waste their time taking a meeting before they do that. So interest, that's the number one thing. Even if they don't take a meeting, if there's a high level of interest, that's an activated lead. And that should be not followed up with on the sales development rep. The sales team should follow up on that, because now you're moving from, you spoke with my colleague, I'm actually the expert here. Do you have some time to talk now, or would it make sense for us to schedule the time? You're going to capture about 20 to 40% more leadership who will not take meetings with an SDR, but are willing to have a conversation. And you can do what I call unscheduled intros. Like, you know, back in the day, it was very difficult to get somebody to a WebEx or a GoToMeeting, right? They had to download software, IT would get involved. It's not as easy as it is today. So we did this all the time back in the day. Like, we would call, we would get them interested, and then it would say, hey, I'll have my rep call you back. Like, they're open to that. So activation, interest, intrigue is the other eye, right? Intrigue. I piqued their interest, right? They weren't really thinking about it, but I said something like, that's interesting, or like, how does that work, right? So intrigue. Information. They are asking questions. You got them to actually start asking you questions, which is a great signal, but the sales development rep either doesn't know how to answer it because they're still junior, or shouldn't answer it because they're starting to move into the sales conversation. So activate a lead. I don't need to book the meeting. I just, like, this person's asking a lot of questions. I should stop answering. I should get my professional seller on that. And the last one would be intent. So a lot of reps will lose, a lot of companies will lose deals because sales development can't book a meeting because they just discovered that they're about to sign with a competitor. Like, they're like, oh, we're already down the path. You missed us. We're literally about to sign. That lead is sitting there and no one calls it because they're not going to take the meeting because they don't want to go do any more evaluation. But if a professional call them back, they might actually be able to get in to that deal at the finish line. So those four eyes are super important. And you don't think about the meeting, you think about activations. And if you actually have that list of people that you know, pick up the phone, they're receptive to having conversations, and you put that in front of your sales team, like I said, the data shows you're going to bring about 20 to 40% more opportunities in your pipeline.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's quickly bring us up to the two companies that you have now. So you were doing the company where you were helping the CEO set everything up. What was the name of that one?
The sales developers.
That's right. The sales developers. And then kind of brings up quickly to where you are now.
Yeah. So at the sales developers, we were using what a lot of people are still using today, the sequencers, the dialers, and the data companies to try to take one rep, turn them into five, and you do all that stuff. The big back end of that was Connect and Sell, which is a parallel assisted dialer. You take a list and it has a bunch of humans in the back end, and it makes you can make 10 dials at the same time you make one, right? And then someone picks up, it transfers the call. What I discovered there after doing millions of dials was that it's not about the data, or sorry, the dialer. It's not the activity. It's actually the data behind the dialing. And so because of that, I discovered something that I actually tried to get Connect and Sell to build. Long story short, they didn't want to build it. So I built it, started a company called Phone Ready Leads, which is essentially a way to help companies determine who on your list is worth calling and who's not before you put it to your sales team. And what that does is it takes an average list where reps have to pick up the phone and make 20, 30, 50 dials to get one person on the phone. Now, if you use Phone Ready Leads, which is now a company called Titan X, reps average a live conversation every 3 to 5 dials. So no longer do you click a button, not know who picks up. It pops in front of you. And you're like, you're scrambling. It's like one-to-one dialing. I have all the information I need. When someone picks up, it's a very clean connect. You have really quality conversations. So that was Phone Ready Leads. I ended up building that and selling that a couple years ago. The company is now called Titan X.
And you're still using that and recommending it to your clients.
So now fast forward to today, what Outbound Operators does is think about like Inside Sales Bootcamp plus the sales developers, but with a modern approach, a lot less technology to solve the problem in the right way. Outcomes that our customers see is when they come to us, they think they need to hire 20, 30, 40 SDRs. We say, no, you don't. You need 1, 2, maybe 3. We set up the system. We use it the right way. We train them on how to use it. And the companies we're working with are getting the production of a team of 20, 30, 40 with 1, 2, or 3. That's kind of where we're at today.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. All right. So just before we do the last bit of the podcast, a couple words of advice to like the CEOs that talk to me and the ones that are out there saying, oh, I need to stand up an SDR team, or my investors want me to hire 30 SDR reps. Like, where do they start? What are the questions they should ask before they decide to go out and hire a whole bunch of SDRs?
I mean, the first thing they need to get is they need to go look at their math of sales.
Yeah, so, the sales math, right? It's always the sales math.
You have to start there. It's always where we start all our conversations. It doesn't really matter until you get a really good view of what it would take using math. And if you don't have any data already because you're brand new, you can make some assumptions to get a general idea. Next step there is don't go and hire to make the assumptions. Use someone who can get you those assumptions really fast in a clean way to do it. By the way, we do that at Outbound Operators. So do the math, prove the math looks good first, and then based on the math, decide to build or not. And in some cases, you may not want to build. And in fact, if you use the right systems that we're talking about, we could stand up a system and enable your AEs, not even use sales development, right? And with smaller markets, that's more often than not the case. Like, you should not hire SDRs. The CAC isn't going to make sense. There's not enough TAM to go after, and there's plenty of efficiencies to be gained to get your reps calling. And by the way, the production will be much higher if you have a professional caller making the first call anyway. So start with the math, prove the math, and then, get the data to drive your decisions. Don't just hire because you want a headcount. Like, hire when the time is right for coverage. So that's the key thing. It always comes back to the math.
Yeah, gosh, absolutely. We're singing the same song. I just love it. Love having this conversation with you. Just amazing. All right, just before we finish, I have a couple of questions for you. One of them is, what's a book that you think every CEO should read?
Yeah, so actually perfectly tailored to this conversation today. There's a really good book, Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. I don't know if you've read that one, but similar concept here. Most CEOs really struggle, get frustrated, and end up, kind of sabotaging their businesses because they are doing all the things we're talking about right here. They're trying to hire for a job versus hiring to buy back their time. So if we're talking about the founder-led sales concept, as soon as you get to a point where you think you want to hire any role within your company, you should think about hiring for tasks and buying back your time. So, and if you think about it that way, it really has a massive unlock. So it's an amazing book. Highly recommend reading it. It kind of changes the perspective of how you find the right people to put into your organization at the right time and kind of unlock scalability within your organizations.
Yeah, I haven't read that, but I have heard about it. And it's definitely one I put on my list. All right, next one is, what's a podcast that you listen to that makes you think differently?
Founders, if you haven't come across Founders, the Founders podcast, incredible podcast. And I'm kind of a weirdo when it comes to podcasts. When I discover a new one, I go all the way back to episode one. So I just love watching the journey of these great creators and like how they struggled in the beginning, because you know, no one's great at first and they get better and better. But Founders, if you go all the way back to the beginning, he basically reads all the books of entrepreneurs, the autobiographies, and then he basically gives his take on it, but he'll read sections and kind of give his take on it. It's an incredible book. So he does it on everybody, the who's, the Henry Fords, the Elon Musks, the Steve Jobs of the worlds. And it's an incredible podcast.
Is really a good one. Absolutely. And then I think you've probably already said this a little bit, but what does every CEO need to know to win in this market?
Math of markets, know their math of sales, right? And I think the big thing here is they need to have real-time visibility in the conversations that are happening at the front line. Like they need to take the time to dig in and not just hear what people are saying is being said, but take the time to actually get involved in live conversations with your market. And this is what I love about Call Blitz, is it gives people that way to do it, right? If you have your team in a place where they're calling, even if it's just once a week or once a month, and you join that and you can listen to the conversations that are happening, how quickly can you as the CEO go, what the heck are we doing? Why are we talking to those people? Hold on a second. Why are we saying that? When they say that, we could say this. The unlock there for the CEO to understand literally what their customers are saying, not their paying customers, but their prospective customers. It goes a very long way to improve all the things we talked about today.
I do feel, especially in smaller companies, that CEOs need to stay really close. I've had experiences where I've received emails from salespeople, from CEOs or companies that I know, either clients or people I know, and I've sent those emails back to the CEO and said, this is what your salespeople are saying.
Yeah. Do you know what your people are sending out?
And they're like shocked and appalled, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same with what they're saying on the phone. And the thing is that the founders are so valuable in the messaging and understanding the market that so quickly they could help address Correct. These things and make them so much better. And so, yeah, I'm with you. Like as a CEO, I want to hear what people are saying. What my sales reps are saying, I want to hear what the prospects are saying back to them. Yep. I want to see those emails and I want to know that the message that's going out that's representing my company is accurate and something that represents us in the way I want to be represented.
Well, it's the message and the targeting too. So you got to pay attention to both of those things because you'd right. be super surprised. Like, the emails that, especially on the email side, the emails that are going out to like, why are we even sending the email to these people?
100%. Like we really should just stop, honestly. And I've been telling people like, just stop because you're not sending the right message to the right person. And that is why you're getting a less than 1% response rate. You're sending thousands of emails and that's literally polluting our earth because all that data has to be stored somewhere. And they're building bigger and bigger and bigger places to store it that take heat and electricity and water and they make noise. And it's like, seriously, people, stop sending emails to people who are never, ever going to answer you.
Yep. No doubt.
Crazy. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. No, I don't rant about this stuff at all, right? But I am passionate about it. I feel like people are making sales way too hard.
Yeah. Well, and the work that they're doing makes the professional org's job harder too, right? Yeah. It's a lot of noise. So, let's stop the madness. Let's get back to the fundamentals. Let's solve the equation. Let's start with the right people with the right message and the right channels at the right time. And the world needs sales professionals, but yes. It has to be done the right way.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. I really appreciate it. Great conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.